theology is. If somebody wants to be a big fan of, you know, Mein Kampf, that's fine. The question is, I'm talking about people who engage in violent assaults on other people and intimidate other people with threats. These people, you say, are favored by the police?
I don't know as far as favored, but they doesn't seem like they want to do anything about it. They're just let them do whatever the fuck they want to do. It's annoying, really. Like, they won't kick them off. You know, it's stupid.
Let's look at it this way. I mean, shouldn't this area be open for everyone? Shouldn't everybody be able to enjoy it?
Yeah.
You know, the Hare Krishnas, you know, the LaRouches, the Moonies, you know, police officers on dope. I don't care. Whoever you are, if it's a public area and you're not beating people up or pissing on the street, it would be nice to have a couple of them. You know, I guess we're getting a few porta potties, but some restrooms would be nice too. Shouldn't these spaces be open to everybody?
Yeah, definitely. They're really discriminative too, the downtown host.
Tell me a little bit about that.
They're just, you know, they look on clothes or
have you suffered any discrimination yourself in the last month from the host, or have
no,
you seen it happen?
No.
You've heard about it?
I've been told about it many times.
Can you tell me any accounts that you particularly believe are particularly credible or particularly dramatic?
Talking about
harassment by the hosts?
Well, I don't know. It's just I don't understand. I mean, what are they there to do? I mean, to kick people off and take down flyers, you know, big deal.
You saw them taking down flyers?
Yeah, that's what they're told to do, is take down flyers. They're downtown.
And you said you've seen them tell people to leave the area or to leave...
Yeah, they're sitting on the corners, just sitting there, minding their own business, you know, just sitting on the corner. And they made an off Pacific Avenue, too, you know, just like on the street over, but...
Is this guy whacked out on drugs? Give me a call at 427-3772. He's attacking our friends, the hosts. Those are those green-garbed characters who you find downtown trying to just help out the Santa Cruz population. Some of them they're helping way out. And I guess the question is, have you had any experiences with the hosts? Actually, I kind of like Bob, the guy in the wheelchair who's the head of the hosts. But on the other hand, I'm not 16 trying to hang out at the Metro, and I'm not sure what's happening, you know, if I'm trying to do that. Tell me about your experiences, good and bad. Have the hosts helped you to find a place overnight? Did they give you some hot soup when you were hungry? Or did they just give you advice to move on before they called the police under some circumstances? I'd like to get some specifics, because you hear a lot of vague things. I'd like to get more particulars. Any particulars you want to share with us, Max?
As far as getting kicked off just for sitting?
Right. By kicked off, you mean told to... Get up and move to another place,
yeah,
or to leave the avenue entirely?
Keep walking, you know.
Keep walking.
Not the avenue, but, you know, you can't sit here, you know, like, you're tired, too bad, keep walking. It's bullshit.
Wouldn't they say move to that bench over there, I mean, rather, or...
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, even by, like, Pergolesi's on that corner, they get, you know, they've told friends of mine or people I know to leave, and it's stupid.
I think they're targeting young people particularly?
Yeah, definitely, very discriminative, or, you know... Probably of people of race, too. I wouldn't even doubt it.
Well, we're going to ponder these things and hope that we can get some response from all of you out there in radio land before we all fall asleep here or get kicked out of the studio. 427-3772 is the number.
Jesse Castillo, I was born in Fresno, to the poverty of the barrio, where trouble is the rule. I never finished school, was trying to play it cool. I ain't no fool. Wending through the jungles of the hood, with the warring of the gangs, still I managed to stay good. Until one summer night, I rode into a fight and heard a fateful shot from where I stood. Very wrong place at just the wrong time, Jesse was pulled in. He had no motive to commit the crime, still the tipster fingered him. The evidence was circumstance, the witnesses not sure. Still he was pressured to confess behind the precinct door. From the jungle to the cage, Jesse was locked away. 15 years to life on ice in a cell at Pelican Bay, where the dark don't hide you from the pain of guards and treatment inhumane. Illness pounds upon the brain and crushes you insane. The cruel is not unusual, they tame you like an animal. Bullets burst and bust your will to teach you not to steal or kill. They chew you up and spit you out and say you've been corrected, and all of its necessity that the public be protected. Before the gang got Jesse in the yard, a warning came and then a shot was fired by a guard. And when the brawl was over and the prisoners put away, in a very wrong place at just the wrong time, a lifeless Jesse lay. People said, behind the walls of Pelican, it's one strike and you're dead. For all the Jessies everywhere who never had a chance, caught between the pincers of social circumstance. Those whose skin is brown or black live on the wrong side of the track, just wanna be cut some slack, but end up stretched out on the rack. May they gain their freedom back, outside as well as in. My name is Jesse Castillo.
We're talking to Edward DeBoer. And Edward, you've been away from town for about 6 months.
6 months.
When you left, you talked to us previously about problems at the Elm Street Mission you had regarding, how would you summarize them?
I stuck my hand over a fence and they called the cops on me and they got me for trespassing.
A trespassing hand?
Yes.
I see. Now, you're back in town and you've been kind of stacking up a few new experiences, or racking them up, I should say. What has happened to you since you've been back, or what do you wish to bring to our attention?
Officer Richards, Monday night, I was walking down the street. He was going down the street harassing everyone. They're kind of doing street sweeps right now.
Where was he?
Off Pacific Avenue and Elm Street.
Uh-huh.
And he was up against a whole bunch of people, and he was telling me, you have like a flake of marijuana, anything, I'll bust you, I'll throw you in jail. It was Officer Richards.
And was he alone? Or
he was alone.
About what time of the day was it?
It was about 10 p.m.
And what day was this?
It was Monday the 12th.
I believe so. Could have been the 13th, actually. Now, did he encounter you?
Yes, I knew he was, so me and my friend, we started walking down the street.
Was he in uniform?
Yes, he was.
Uh-huh.
And his cop car was 128. His badge number is 199.
And what kind of conversations was he having with people?
With me?
With the other people first.
There was about 6 to 7 people there, and he was like telling them how that he was going to bust them and, you know, take them all to jail if he ever found them doing anything wrong. If you walk in 10-degree angle out of the crosswalk, I'll take you to jail.
He made that specific statement?
Specific statement. 10-degree angle out of a crosswalks.
So he was trying to train people to walk properly through the crosswalks.
No, he wasn't. No one had crossed the crosswalk.
He was advising them in advance in order to sort of assist them in their potential crosswalking behavior.
No, he wasn't. He was harassing people, telling them he was going to take them to jail for any reason that he saw fit.
Now, where was this group of people standing that he was so
They were standing against Union Grove Music.
Did he seem to be interested in dispersing this group? Was that his intention?
No, he just wanted to humiliate and harass people.
Well, what was the effect? What did the group do after they'd received these warnings?
They dispersed.
They did disperse?
Yes, they did.
So perhaps his motivation was to disperse them?
Maybe, I don't know, but I think it was harassment.
So you followed him in order to...
No, I walked down the street because I knew he was going to follow me and my friends. So we walked down the street and proceeded to the payphone across the street from Perger Lacey's. And I got on the phone, I was calling my dad, and lo and behold, here he comes right down the street. And he comes up to my friend, asks him for his ID, and he takes the ID, and he harasses him for a little bit.
Now, what basis did he seek this man's ID? You cannot demand an ID.
He said, give me your ID, and he said, are you on probation? Are you wanted? Do you have any warrants?
Was your friend on probation?
Yes, he was.
So, did he have a search clause?
Yes, he did.
So, therefore, that was the basis on which he asked for that.
And so, I'm not done. Okay, sure. So, I went to the payphone, I got on the payphone, I started talking to my dad, he went over to my friend, which is standing about 2 feet from me, pulled out his flashlight, flashed in his eyes, asked him if he's been doing drugs lately, is he under the influence, and then I'm still on the phone, he says, can I see your eyes, and I was like, no, I'm on the phone, go away, and I turned around like this, still talking to my dad on the phone, and he was behind me, and I was like that. And he hung up the phone, and so I hung it up, and he said, now can I see your eyes? And I was like, yeah. So he put his light up to my eye, and I shut it. And then he turned it over to there, and I shut that eye. And then he really started getting pissed. And then I opened up my eyes, and I told him, get a clue, bud. I don't do drugs. And he really started to get pissed off.
Do you have a search clause?
No, I don't.
I see.
So then
did you consent to this, or you?
No, I didn't.
Did you tell him that you didn't consent?
Yes, I did. And he said he started giving me the same rundown as they gave the group of kids.
Advice on how to walk across the street and sort of thing.
Yeah, harassment. Mm-hmm. And that was it on that.
So Officer Richards, we're talking about?
Officer Richards, badge number 199, cop car 128.
Gosh, Officer Richards, if you're
199-828.
If you're listening,
license plate number.
Hey, if you're listening, you have a critic here. Perhaps you'd like to respond publicly to these concerns. If so, give us a call at 427-3772. A suggestion from an onlooker is that you file a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board.
That's why I have all this information in my bag.
Okay. Anything else happened recently that you think that we should know about?
No.
Well, welcome back to town, Edward, and try not to get in any more hand across the Elm Street Mission fence trespass situations.
Okay.
Thanks. We're talking to Richard Quigley. Richard, you're a tall guy with a leather jacket. What's happening with you these days?
relative to what? Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, you're here in the court area. What brings you to this den of iniquity where lawyers feed off human beings?
Well, this is a smoking area, but I'm working with the sheriff's office today. I stopped by the sheriff's office because I wanted to see their policy manual. I wanted to know what the policy is toward handing out unsubstantiated, unconfirmed incident reports to law firms to be used for a purpose separate than they were made for. And I want to find out what the policy is for running people's license plates for purposes of identifying them. And
What did you find?
Well, I was told that they apparently have a policy that you have to put your request in writing and give it to the Internal Affairs officer. So now, of course, my inquiry will be that I want to see the policy for seeing the policy.
I see. It becomes more Byzantine as we proceed.
Well, you're working with the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office. I wondered about this whole thing. You know, I heard this recent Supreme Court decision where they talked about how it is that you can exclude people from hiring as cops if they're too intelligent. And I think it's...
I heard about that, too.
Yeah, the IQ cutoff is around 125. And, you know, that's a dangerous enough prospect to know that, that they require the guy to be an idiot before they give him a gun and a badge. But they have a second law in California which might prove interesting next to that, and that is that in order to run for sheriff, one of the contentions they had with me running for sheriff was that I wasn't a cop. So they had it made into law, I think it was in 96, they made a law that says you had to be a cop to run for sheriff. Now, if you'll think about both those dynamics side by side, what you suddenly discover is that the expectation of having a sheriff with an IQ over 125 is nil. So now what we've done is we've not only limited our police to being ignoramuses, but we've also limited our sheriffs to being ignoramuses.
Well, it's consistent.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, you definitely want to screw yourself down. That's the way to do it.
Any legal cases coming up, and any reports from the Apto Shopping Center around the Jerry Henry situation? Jerry Henry, as you may remember, was the street minister who out at Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center was multiply harassed by the sheriffs out there, not to mention First Alarm Security and the merchants.
And the district attorney.
And the district attorney's office, for essentially trying to advise young people about their rights. And in so doing, I guess he empowered them and encouraged them to stand up to police misconduct, police move along kind of behaviors. What's he been up to, and what's happening out there lately?
Well, I see traces of white flags everywhere. It seems that the they have decided that Mr. Henry is one of those forces that they just soon not disturb. So they've kind of backed off him. If they're doing anything now, it's more covert. We have noticed that a couple of the merchants have taken to carrying tape recorders, which, of course, you know, we've always recommended that. We're not sure why they're carrying tape recorders, but we have merchants now running around with handheld tape recorders. And so they
maybe they intend to go on free radio, and we can invite any merchant at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center who wishes to come on with any selections about what's going on out there. Give us a call at 427-3772.
Yeah, I think you'll find that the only real merchants involved in this social cleansing program down there at the shopping center would be the Gottschalk's store manager. I think her name is Easterby, yeah, okay, Easterby, and
I'm not responsible for the slurs and, should we say, vicious statements of my guests. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely a slur, vicious statement. And then, of course, the Aptos Roasting Company, who is the first cousin to Santa Cruz Roasting Company, we can all understand where they're coming from. And then the guy that owns the Aptos Ranch, the Rancho Liquors. Except for those three merchants, I don't think you'll find that any of them have chosen to devote their energies to harassing the members of the community.
Well, has the police department, has Aptos Rancho Del Mar, or has anybody taken up my suggestion that this restraining order that essentially was being used to keep Jerry Henry away from the Aptos Roasting Company either be set aside or properly enforced or somehow dealt with so that he can more comfortably return, have his cup of coffee, we can all go back to our lives?
No.
I see. Well, that's a real pity. Anything else you want to add?
You know, power to the people, man. I hope that these people in this demonstration against Kosovo do well down here at court. But no, other than that, I've got to go down to the law library and do some research and, of course, write a letter to the sheriff's office to find out what their policy is for accessing their policy.
Yeah.
And I'll be sure to let you know the return on that one.
Exciting. Thank you very much, Richard. That was Richard Quigley.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Peer Robert Norris, and we have another, 45 minutes, a little more than that, here on the air, and an open phone line, 427-3772. Every Thursday before the Citizens Police Review Board meeting, there's one member of the Citizens Police Review Board who actually meets with the public. Actually, there are two, Becky Blythe and Sandy Brown. And in a way, it's kind of a hopeless situation because the Citizens Police Review Board is not only saddled with a sort of stalemated board where you have three or four people who are simply unthinkingly pro-police, but they also have to deal with a city council that is timid and unwilling to really stand up and support them. Now, we'd hope there was a change in this when they voted for the first time in the history of the Police Review Board. It's been around since 1995, actually since 1994, but really since 95, to have an independent investigator, an independent investigation by Diana Christensen, a Berkeley PI, on the May 22nd incident. That was the case of the folks at the McPherson Center who were protesting the bombing of Yugoslavia. Cases have reached the court, as I'm sure regular listeners know. Steve Argue was convicted of punching a cop in defense of a woman whose hand was being twisted back and her child in her arms. According to the fears of that particular person who did the punching, Steve Argue was going to fall and so forth. And other people have been arrested around that protest for resisting arrest or for obstructing an officer, or I guess one fellow was arrested for battery, for putting his hand, for touching a police officer, Officer Tripp, who seemed to be going after another person who was going after another parent with a child. There seemed to be a focus on people with kids at this protest in a whole shindig, which is going to be investigated by the independent investigator. Of course, the sad thing here, and the catch, as they put it, is that the investigation, according to John Barisone, the police officer's friend, the man who defends the police officers from lawsuits here in the city, and apparently is kind of doing a preemptive defense, has ruled that the entire report will be kept confidential. And this, of course, means that the entire independent investigation, although I guess you might say it provides an independent look, theoretically, at what happened, since the process will not be available for the public to look at, is not going to do very much to reassure those of us who are thinking that, in spite of the plain evidence of videotapes, where you can see Officer Lefevre pulling this woman off to the side, grabbing her hand as she screams, and you can see police engaging in their usual, we're going to be the tough guys whether you like it or not, we're not going to tell you why we're taking a woman to jail, even though I'm sure the woman would have had no objection. She was one of the protesters. She wanted them to know. And in fact, the police didn't know why they were taking her to jail. Or perhaps they did and they were changing their story, but they wouldn't say. They were simply engaging in a bald exercise of power. And when they were confronted with counterpower, people surrounding the van, they didn't know. They went after the people with the children and inflaming the crowd more. And we're hoping that this becomes the basis for some kind of meaningful dialogue with the police department in terms of, you know, you can really only have a dialogue if you're on an equal footing. And to get on an equal footing, you have to have some power, and the power hopefully can come from public sense that the police have gone too far. I, cynic that I am, don't see this about to happen, unfortunately. I mean, if they can shoot down Happy John Dine and come up with different concocted stories about it and dismiss all the non-police witnesses who saw no weapon in Dine's hand, saw nothing pointed at the police, saw no combat stance, and they can still whitewash it, and there's no outcry from the community broadly, then in this lesser case, you know, but we have hopefully a new city council, and we have a new caller too. Let's see what's happening here. Hi, you're on the air.
I just would like to say that I think the police have gone too far.
Well, who are you, sir? You know, there you are, an anomalous caller, or an anonymous caller, claims the police have gone too far. So, actually, I recognize that voice. That's the voice of critic David Silva. Poor David has been tied up for 3 years in a lawsuit against the police department. I actually saw his lawsuit on the city council's closed litigation session, and who knows, maybe they're dickering about some kind of a settlement. They've certainly been dickering him around for 3 years, and I hope that he gets some satisfaction out of the legal system and the endless legal machinations of attorneys who seem to be making money while, or perhaps they're not. It's a contingency thing, I would imagine. Anyway, what's happening with the independent investigation? That's what I wanted to find out today. I talked to Sandy Brown, and some of us have proposed that since Barisone has now said, oh, well, you've got to keep this investigation confidential because it involves the sacred police personnel files, some of us suggested, well, before you go to the police personnel files, hold a public process wherein the independent investigator gathers information from witnesses publicly, if the witnesses agree to do so publicly, and then records that information so it becomes a public record. Unfortunately, I have to sadly report the latest word from Sandy Brown and from the Citizens Police Review Board, actually from the Citizens Police Review Board's Gary Yamane directly, is that Diana Christensen is not going to do this. She's going to have a private information gathering process. And it is the hope of the board, or some members of the board, I guess, that eventually this will all become public, either because
Barisoni will be shown to be wrong, and they will look for other legal opinions. Perhaps somebody will leak the report. I've got no idea if that would ever happen. Or perhaps they'll hold public hearings once they get all the information, and that would be public. And they've never held a public hearing, just as they've never had an independent investigation. So it's all getting pretty darn iffy, and it's particularly peculiar because up in Oakland, though they have a weaker, it's hard to imagine a weaker process than ours, but they have a weaker police review process, though they have a weaker oversight process of the police, they have established it clearly, apparently, according to second-hand information I have, that investigations are not closed to the public. That is to say, they don't have to be, they're not, state law does not require them to be closed. It's interesting to go through all these, this tangle, because we're talking about a group that, even if they had an open investigation, couldn't get any disciplinary process or power directly anyway. They don't have it. They weren't granted it by the city council, or I guess they probably might even need a city charter amendment to get any disciplinary power over the police department, or they might need to do some kind of a grand jury recommendation might have some power. Some kind of an independent investigator or an independent district attorney might have some power, but they, of course, don't have any power. So perhaps it's a waste of time for us even to begin to talk about it. But since we're enmeshed in this process, we do talk about it. And I wonder, perhaps, if proposals by for an independent citizens tribunal, which has been proposed by myself and other people along the road, is really what we have to start looking at. That's what's being looked at in San Jose, where there have been 8 shootings this year, 7 of them fatal by the San Jose police. Here in Santa Cruz, you know, I am happy to say we haven't had any fatal shootings this year. I'm not even aware we've had any shootings this year. But still, the question of the rights of the public vis-a-vis the police remains an important one. For instance, one of the questions that the Citizens Police Review Board member Becky Blythe had was, we hear of people being arrested for observing police arrests. That is to say, Steve Argue, for instance, on July 22nd, was arrested by Officer Martin, for obstructing an officer, for observing, that wasn't even an arrest, it was sort of a detention investigation of a guy who had a, $13,000 check or something that turned out to be just fine, but he was complaining that the police officer shouldn't be examining it and Argue and Vince Lombardo, a Free Radio Santa Cruz reporter who has a show and who recorded the whole thing on tape and played that tape on the air, were encouraging the groups of people to watch this whole process because it smacked them of harassment. And by the tape and by the testimony that I gathered after the arrest, Officer Martin just walked in, shoved Vince Lombardo, and arrested Argue for obstructing an officer. And what are the rules? You know, how far away do you have to stand? 10 feet? 5 feet? 20 feet? And when asked this question, she had a conference with Chief Belcher, she was told, Police Review Board member Blythe, according to Sandy Brown, that they have no rules on this. They have no policy. Sorry. Next question. Well, this is rather interesting because other police departments in other cities do have a policy about this. And if we don't have a policy here, then we damn well better get one. Because people have to know what their rights are, and these policies also have to be reasonable. The police are armed and dangerous. That is to say, they possess the power of life and death in our community. They're armed with massive amounts of authority here. And it's because of this power, they must be closely monitored by the community. That doesn't mean they must be interfered with. That doesn't mean that they should be punched at every available opportunity. Nor does it mean that in any particular case, when a police officer is punched, that the individual who punches that police officer should face 4 years in jail if the reason for that punch had to do with a bizarre and unorthodox pain compliance hold that the officer claimed wasn't even putting a screaming woman with a child in her arms in pain. And I go back to that case because, of course, like with some other things, we seem to be stuck in a certain place, kind of focused on it, forced to view this drama endlessly again and again because of what the prosecution and the police department is doing with it. But the police review board's coming up on Monday, a week from Monday actually, has its first meeting, and we have an incoming phone call. I will bow to that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I think we ought to reform that police review board altogether. But I was thinking we ought to, somebody out there ought to start organizing students to come down for the John Dine Memorial. We need to have a nice memorial this year, a big memorial. A really, 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 really big memorial.
That would be in November. Well, you remember last year.
Well, is that Mutual Washington taking that over, or is that building open and free to take? Or what?
You're referring to Happy Corner at Soquel in front, where Happy John Dine was shot.
Yeah,
I don't know, but I know that last year in November, when there was a memorial march, and Keith Sugar and Chris Crone stood up, actually in the same picture with Steve Argue talking about Happy John Dine. The next day, Steve was thrown to the ground for selling newspapers and dragged off to the Pokey for 4 days, several of them in solitary, and then released without any charges at all. And thank you very much. He's suing the city for that one, so I don't know what would happen the next time we do
it. It seemed like we had every mayor in town working on getting that boy out of there before they hurt him.
They didn't do too well. He stayed in there for 4 days.
Yeah, I know.
You know, not one of them.
Reveals where the power is in this town.
Right, I'm not aware that any mayors worked at all. I know that you have a more optimistic view of that. Celia Scott was mayor at that time.
Well, I just want to say that I think we ought to organize a nice memorial this year. Big one. Somebody ought to get up there and organize some students.
We've already boosted...
I'm signing off.
We've already boosted your hate-free zone weekend, by the way.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Yeah, we're all over the place. We're, Holy Cross, we're up at the university, we're at the Common Action... You know, we want to get people out into the neighborhoods and into the streets and getting those signatures. So as many people show up to events that they can get, just a little bit of training, that'd be great.
David, have you got a phone number? Got a phone number people can call?
We have a reverend who's going to be showing up, a gay reverend, carrying a cross and a rainbow flag, and he's going to make a couple statements.
Got a phone number people can call if they want?
Yeah, 425-4499.
Okie doke. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
And, of course, November 12th was the day that John Dine was shot dead by Officer Connor Carey, and we have another incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I think you should apologize right now to Officer Connor Carey for abusing his right to murder somebody or whatever.
Well, I don't know who you are, caller, but actually I do know who you are. I think Officer Carey... has actually been recently called and reminded of how some people in the community regard that action, the shooting of Happy John Dine. Becky Johnson, I believe, in an incident involving various skateboarders in Loudoun Nelson Park about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
Called out the whole net team, I heard.
Yeah, she was present, confronting Carey and demanding that he face the reality that there was no significant disciplinary consequence to what happened. Of course, we don't know what the disciplinary consequence was. Anyway.
Well, I just I opened the paper, was it yesterday, to read about they want Crone and Sugar to apologize for...
Oh, right. I have those papers here. They're actually at both the Mercury News and the Sentinel.
Yes.
The claim is that Crone and Sugar, who, in my mind, have done very little to help deal with the problem of overwhelming police power in this town, unchecked police power, an increasing police department. They're suddenly, of course, the Police Officers Association isn't satisfied unless, I guess, unless you're dead and buried. I mean, I don't know what the story is.
Well, I just think it's funny that they're now trying to say that they're the tortured activists now, calling it a union, which the Officers Association is not a union.
Now, why isn't it a union?
Why?
Uh-huh.
I understand it's a bargaining unit.
Well, isn't that what a union is?
You might want to have David Silva field that question more.
Well, perhaps if David can hobble over to the phone, he can give us the difference between the Police Officers Association and, let's say, a union like the Teamsters.
I'll give you first my quick opinion on this whole matter. First of all, Christopher Cone and Keith Sugar show up to a public courtroom to watch part of this trial, along with other people that were in there, including one of the CPRB members and various other Santa Cruz police officers. One of them even sitting on the side of the defense, and I don't see them having to apologize for being there, and it shows, like, I think David Civil was saying that the true power comes from the police, because now they're trying to restrict, even if the city council, you know, these two city council peoples did show up to a protest a long time ago, blah, 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 they can't use their First Amendment free speech for, you know, fear of being attacked by the police. And so now it makes them think twice the next time they want to attend a protest or something.
Well, I'm hoping that Christopher Crone will call in. We heard from him earlier in the show. He was in the middle of doing something else, and I hope he can...
He left a message for you on a free radio voicemail, just saying that he was returning his call, your call.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, he did call the studio, and I'm hoping he will. He's listening to this and will call back, because, you know, this front page horseshit around the police ask for apology.
Right.
I think for the citizenry to understand this, they have to look at the broader dimensions here. Sugar and Crone have asked questions about the police department's endless blank check. They have not in any way suggested any kind of radical changes, which I would prefer to see them looking into, you know, an alternate system of policing in this town that doesn't involve lethal force,
right?
Things of that sort. You know, that has not been on their agenda in the least. And of mm-hmm. course, they have heavily distanced themselves from the Santa Cruz Five.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't introduce anything on the agenda. I guess Maureen and Michael Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party asked them to do this, to recommend that all charges be dropped against the Santa Cruz Five. And they said, well, may, you know, no, that was not going to happen, and they weren't even going to put it on the agenda. And it was, you know, it's simply contrary to fact to suggest that Crone and Sugar have been sympathetic to activists in this way. I mean, we kind of dismissed them about 6 months ago when they decided to sort of bend over and deal and do the Byers hobble. You know, when Byers did her thing about, you know, let's keep it illegal for homeless people to sleep, and Crone and Sugar said, oh yes, Ms. Byers, oh yes, are you right, Ms. Byers? And when they did that, well, there's nothing we can do, we ain't got the votes. Then when they did that sort of thing, I thought, you know, next, time to move on, and I think a lot of us felt the same way. So it's not like these guys are radicals in any way. And it's really just, it's a ploy by the police department. And what I've
Yeah, but it's also it's a ploy, and I'd say more by Barbara Williams, who, when all that stuff was going on in the courtroom, that...
Barbara Williams, of course, is a Police Officers Association representative.
Right.
The flaming redhead in the back at every police review board meeting for all of you who come to those meetings.
Right. And I think this is all pretty much between her, maybe Sergeant Crane or something, who is another violent officer, who is the head of the Police Officers Association, who they quoted in the paper as well, and also on the front page of today's paper, looking sad in front of the new police station. But that's another story.
Ah, shucks, yeah.
And also the quotes from Steve Clark, who's the head of the I'm not sure what it is, domestic violence or something like that, and he's one of the most violent officers. I've been threatened myself by him numerous times.
You have?
With bodily harm.
Has that happened recently? Or?
No, not recently. It's when he was with the NET team, and I was observing how our police officers work, which they don't like me to observe their little sting operations. Well, I'm not interfering, I'm not talking to anybody. They have to come up and threaten me anyway, to make sure that I, you know, keep my distance from him, which I already was.
Well, I remember Clark, who occasionally delights in undercover operations, he was involved in one of these student protests.
The 209 rally.
And what happened there? Do you want to?
There was a march that was downtown Santa Cruz during the 209, which was the what was the 209? It was discrimination against.
It ended affirmative action.
Yeah, affirmative action.
California education.
And there were students marching downtown, and I came up upon the march like around around New Leaf Market, and I saw the march, and I noticed right away it was Officers Berticelli and Haley of the neighborhood enforcement team at that time. Now they're, I think, in Haley's in investigation. She was doing the filming of what happened on May 22nd that day in plain clothes. But they were both in plain clothes walking. They didn't, you know, walking along with the march. They weren't, you know, singing or having peace signs out, except for one other officer, Sergeant Steve Clark, who was dressed in this wonderful tie-dye shirt with his gun bulging out the side. This duct tape to the front of him and the back of him was, you know, no on 209 or you know, 209 on there. He was carrying a candle, and he was peace sign. He was singing just like one of the protesters. He was, you know, singing.
Well, this is commendable. Maybe Sergeant Clark is expanding his repertoire.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was kind of wondering myself that night. I came up and I said, wow, look at that. There's a Santa Cruz police officer in the march. He must, you know, he must be politically aware of some of these things. And so once I started pointing them out, they figured that out and got out of the crowd immediately. And so then I decided to ride my bike over by where they were. And I said, look, I just really wanted to know, what's your position on this? It looks like that you're politically aware of these issues. And Sergeant Clark came up to me and says, you fuck with me and I'll hurt you. And I filed a inquiry, which I should have filed a complaint at the time, but I never did an inquiry.
An inquiry, of course, is a minor complaint that Belcher can drop in the wastebasket.
Right. And all I was done is contacted by Lieutenant Havey on the street, and he just said, well, he said he was going to sting you, not hurt you. And I said, oh, gee, that sounds a lot alike. Hurt, sting, you know, that's because he's the net team. He is going to sting you, blah, blah, blah. And I go, sting me? I don't do drugs. I don't know why he would want to sting me. You know, and
I know Officer Clark, you know, I've talked about him on, I mean, Sergeant Clark, I've talked about on the air. And the only reason to talk about individual officers is because the normal review process for police officers simply really doesn't exist.
Right.
I mean, it is not effective. I mean, I guess if you have a big party in the basement of the county building, you might get a reprimand. You might even get suspended. On a rare occasion, you might get fired. But if you engage, for example, if you walk up to a skateboarder, pull out a gun, say down on your knees and say your prayers, as
right.
Officer, now Sergeant Clark, said in 1988 to a man in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz in front of witnesses.
Yeah, who's now investigating hate crimes.
Right, if he walks up to an individual like he did to Anthony Douglas 4 months ago and shows his badge and threatens him to get off the street for panhandling, even though his panhandling behavior is completely legal, and then he suffers no consequences from the police department.
Of course. He got promoted. Now he's in investigations.
If he can harass and threaten members of the police review board like John Malkin, and threatening him with a political file, which, by the way, apparently is what I'm hearing is being said to Sandy Brown regarding the new police review board, that the Police Officers Association is going to go after them.
Oh, I see.
And with, you know, political files, and of course they're going to tie up the entire process of any attempt to subpoena police officers to testify by the independent investigator in court, and that's fine. I mean, that's par for the course. We can expect them to engage in these legal games, and what we have to hope for is that the community sees in this resistance of the police department to reasonable inquiry a really either a tendency to conceal bad behavior or a desire to be untouchable regardless of what their behavior is.
Right.
You know, and I think that the more the community sees this, the more chance there is of getting a stronger public pressure for real review of the police department.
Right.
For a police department that isn't subservient to somebody like Chief Belcher. I filed a complaint about Belcher, which has disappeared into the bowels of the Citizens Police Review Board. I'm hoping it'll come back a week from Monday, which is when the Police Review Board has its next meeting. That complaint concerned the fact that Steve Argue's arrest back in November of last year for selling newspapers was essentially covered up by the police chief, who described the whole thing not as an arrest for selling newspapers, but for obstructing the sidewalk. And why is this distinction important? Well, because selling newspapers is a legal activity, wherein obstructing the sidewalk is not. And when the chief rewrites history on this issue, and he does so in a letter that is public, when he has the arrogance or the complacency to be able to believe that he can get away with this kind of stuff without any kind of consequences, and he probably can, we have to find some way to bring a public spotlight to bear on this.
Well, even blocking the sidewalk, I've been cited for having my bike on the sidewalk while I was observing the police harassing the Stephen King shot John Lennon guy, and I proved in court that obviously, you know, the law says that this thing or whatever object, I don't know if it could be a person blocking the sidewalk, has to be there for an unreasonable amount of time. So, like, if I dropped a piano on the sidewalk, obviously it's going to be there a while, you know, or drove my car up on the sidewalk. Yes, but not a person cannot be blocking the sidewalk, you know. I mean, I guess a person could be, but if, you know, if you're going to move, you can move. You have feet, you can move. It's not against the law.
Well, the only time that obstructing the sidewalk, I think, comes into play is if you are occupying more than a third of the sidewalk, you're told to move, and then you intentionally refuse to move, in a blocking position, then you're obstructing the sidewalk. And, you know, that's a reasonable ordinance. I mean, you know, the sidewalk should be open for people to walk through, although, again, there are also occasions when people are kind of clustered around on first night-type nights, and you don't see police arresting masses of tourists for doing, you know, reasonable activities, whereas if it's a bunch of young people, you know, they are cleared away pretty fast, and so there is a discriminatory element there.
Just as another little input on this whole police, you know, they're hurt, obviously their favorite's hurt, and they want, you know, Christopher Cronin and Sugar to do 40 hours of police riding around with the cops and apologize and sit down, you know, with a one-on-one and blah, blah, blah. And it seems like the police are trying to struggle for some type of footing of power or something, because, I mean, obviously, we're in a small little town. If we're in San Francisco, where you don't know one cop from the other, you know, there's thousands and thousands of cops there, and you don't know one from the other. Here we are talking about a specific officer and their specific, what they've been doing, you know, their abuse or what have you. And it's a smaller basis there, and I think that they're having a problem with that, because we are keeping aware of what police officers are doing what, and we all know which ones are doing what, and we know their badge numbers, and we're getting a little more organized in that area, and I think that they're a little bit scared, in a way, and so this is why they're doing these little lash out things, you know, wanting to control the city council from using their freedom of speech, even if they wanted to show up for a rally, even if they were in support of Steve Argue, you know. And that one article, I think it was in the Sentinel, that they said that part of the their demands was that they can't say anything about police officers. Okay, well, technically, the whole thing is about city employees.